Welcome to your Right to Speak discussions on child rights and advocacy. This is episode 12. I'm your host, Salvatore. Today we'll be talking with Joey, who is the team lead of digital media for Pride and someone who I actually went to high school with. We'll be talking with Joey about various gaps and challenges within the LGBTQ plus community. Joey, can you please introduce yourself?
Hi there, guys. My name is Joey Fascio. I'm the team lead of digital media for Pride Toronto. I oversee all photography and video for the festival.
So, Joey, we're just going to dive right into the questions. The first thing that I would like to ask you is, do you find the world is more accepting of the LGBTQ plus community?
That's a really good question. Do I find that the LGBT community is more accepted throughout the world? Definitely. I do think we've come a long way since in the past 35 years. I mean, 35 years ago, it was illegal to be gay or to, you know, be with the same sex partner. In today's society, I think that the LGBTQ plus community has an opportunity to be freely accepted, regardless of their sexual orientation, their gender, their race, or their religious backgrounds. I do think that there's still more to come and there's still more acceptance needed. We unfortunately do have some politicians who are out there who still see us as a threat, and I don't understand why. I mean, we are the most loving community out there. We accept all people regardless of who they are, and we accept anything and everyone, essentially.
So you're saying that the world is more accepting, but there needs to be some more things that need to be changed a bit.
Correct.
Right? So what are some of these things that you think need to be changed?
I think there needs to be more acceptance in the trans community, especially. You know, for someone who is transgendered, it's very difficult for them to come out or to identify as transgendered. Access to medical resources, access to the drugs to help them transition, access to information is also very hard to come by. Oftentimes, it's also access to funds. I mean, they don't have the funds to go through with those surgeries. I think the government should actually be helpful to people who decide to transition. I also find that there's a lot of stigma out there in the world right now as it relates to sexually transmitted diseases. People who live with HIV or AIDS or any other sexually transmitted disease are labeled with a stigma of being a slut. And I don't think it should be. I think it should be, you know, accepting of who they are. Right now, a lot of STDs out there are livable and they're treatable, and you can live full, long, happy lives if you have HIV or AIDS.
So what would you say, because I can see some of the listeners just questioning a bit how the world has become more accepting. So some people I've talked with have said it's only on the surface that we've become accepted as a community. Let's just bring in the recent with, you know, the Orlando shootings and stuff. What would your response to something like that be?
I wouldn't say it's just on the surface. I do find that there are people out there who definitely do deep down accept us for who we are. The Orlando shooting was an unfortunate event, and that actually was by a person who struggled with his own sexual identity. He, from news reports, from what I've been reading and from what I found out, is that he struggled with his own identity as a gay man and tried to hide it. He was sexually confused. He was struggling with his religion. He was struggling with his identity. And unfortunately, he took lives of so many people, and they were all innocent. No one deserved to have died for this one man's confusion. But then that boils back down to his community and how he was accepted in his own family and in his own lifestyle and in his own religion. Again, it's just, some people are raising their children to hate the LGBT community, but there's no need for hate. Love is love is love.
That's a good point. So let's just change gears just a little bit. So we've said that the world is more or less more accepting of the community, but what about within the community itself? So some people within the LGBTQ community and the rest of the abbreviation have said that the community is not fully represented, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that the community kind of doesn't accept its own members in a sense, or?
I do think that is actually a really good question. There are parts of the LGBTQ community that aren't represented fully. They I mean, you have these different organizations that say they support all people under the acronym, but I do find within our own community there is an issue in terms of ageism, in terms of people who identify as being bisexual, in terms of people who identify as gender nonconforming. A lot of people just think that the only label in our community is gay and lesbian, but there's so much more to it. I find that there are people that I've interacted with throughout my experience with Pride who identify as being gay, but they don't understand what the other acronyms mean or who those people are or how those people have come to identify those acronyms. They think that the gay community is sort of taking over and we really shouldn't focus so much on the trans community or the Aboriginal community or the two-spirited community. So I think there is an opportunity for us to actually be more connected and to have a little bit better understanding. There's also another part of the community that people don't realize, and that is the elderly community. If it wasn't for our elderly members of our community, we wouldn't be able to walk the streets freely and be happy and, you know, hold our partner's hand. The elderly community made a lot of sacrifices over the years to get us to where we are, to get us our human rights. And for that, we should be very respectful and thankful towards them.
Absolutely. So in terms of the other, you know, bi people and the rest of the abbreviations, how does the community come together and be more accepting of each other, to be more accepting of bi people, to be more accepting of pansexual and all these other different sexual orientations?
That's a good question. I find that as time is now going on and developing and people are slowly evolving, mentalities are evolving. And I find that people nowadays are becoming more gender fluid. They're not really identifying as one gender. They're not identifying as one sexuality. And I find that we should be really accepting of people who, you know, want to have, are bisexual, transsexual, who are pansexual, who are asexual. I mean, we should be accepting of that. It's not always about sex. It's mostly about who they are and who they love. And I don't think it has to be boiled down to a sexual act or favor or something like that.
Do you think, because I can see some people saying that Pride is just the focus of gay and lesbian, more or less, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that Pride, you know, like Pride Month has to have more of, a focus on the other sexual orientations? Do you think there needs to be more done with that?
Absolutely. And I'm not saying that it should happen overnight. It does take time for that to be built up. Mm-hmm. And I do think that Pride Toronto in itself has done a lot more advocacy in terms of bringing awareness to the trans community, the bi community, the Aboriginal community. So I do think that it's coming and that will be growing and developing over time. But I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. Look at the gay community and lesbian community. It took us almost 35 years to get an apology from the Toronto Police for, you know, barging down on bathhouse raids. So I mean, it does take time, and Pride Toronto in itself is pushing that envelope, and they're trying to get more acceptance across the board. I mean, Pride Toronto also brought on 5 new board members who identify as transgender. So I mean, it's a step forward, and we're going in the right direction. It just does take time. Everything doesn't happen overnight.
So I just want to take another change of focus a bit more into the cultural side. And it's something that stuck with me for a while. My old co-host, Josh, who is a member of the LGBTQ community, had made a point in saying and explaining to me, he was a guest at one point, saying that Pride is just solely for white males.
I would argue that.
Okay, go.
Pride is not solely for white males. If Josh had ever attended a Pride festival, he would see that over the time we've actually developed and have expanded Pride to be more inclusive of the Arab Aboriginal community. Anytime we open up a Pride ceremony within the LGBTQ village in Toronto, we always give respect and acknowledgement to the Aboriginal community that once stood on those lands. Same with our Black community. We've been celebrating Black Pride for many years in the LGBTQ community. This year we have Black Lives Matter as our Grand Marshal. They're going to be the ones leading our parade and, you know, leading the Prime Minister down Yonge Street. So, I mean, I do think that Pride is more aware and focus more on international pride and mm-hmm. whether it be from cultures, genders, races, I think they are being more inclusive. This year we have a lot of Lebanese performers as well. Last year we had a whole event focused around Bombay and the Indian festival, and I know we focus more on other cultures. We're not just looking for white males. Mm-hmm. Now, I would argue that there are other events that tend to happen around the same Pride Month that do target white males in general, and specifically the, you know, beefy, hot-looking, attractive males. But that's not what Pride Toronto does. Pride mm-hmm. Toronto is all-inclusive of all genders, sexes, races, people of color. And I would honestly say that Josh should really take a look at all the events we have coming up this month.
You know, it was interesting that he had brought up, and I would love to hear your opinion on this. He was saying that something with, and I hope I'm quoting him properly. He would get so angry if I don't. something with how we even look at gay porn mm-hmm. and how, like, black men are represented in gay porn is very specific, and it's a very certain way compared to the rest mm-hmm. of it. And he was saying that, like, how black men are seen in the community is very different, right? Would you say that as a community, there needs to be a bit more of, I guess, that cultural awareness or that understanding or that, I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts?
Well, it depends on what you mean by how they're represented in gay porn. Like, how are they represented? I personally don't watch gay porn often, but... Please.
Well, he was saying something like they were, I guess, seen. He had wrote a whole paper, and I wish he was here. He would explain it better than me. I guess seen more aggressive mm-hmm. compared to, I guess, white men in porn. And that's kind of my understanding of what he was saying was that's kind of transcendent of how, like, black men are seen within the community, in a sense, like, sexually.
I would argue that gay porn has it wrong for sure, then. I don't think that all black gay men are aggressive or rugged or dominant, I guess. Is that what he was alluding to? I would say that, yeah, they have it wrong. But it's a stigma, just like there's a stigma on the HIV community where, you know, everyone who has HIV is immediately a slut. Like, there's that stigma in the media. And... I mean, organizations like Pride Toronto and like the 519 Community Center are trying to break down those stigma barriers because, unfortunately, that's what mainstream media has out there, and we're trying to break those barriers because that's not what we want. We do not want people to feel as if there's one paintbrush you brush everyone with. Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, you've mentioned HIV a couple of times and all mm-hmm. that. So do you think we've come really a long way to kind of, let me think of my wording here. So, like, for a while, it's been, like, HIV was very... It was identified with gay men, let's say, right? It was gay men, HIV was very, like, connected. And so do you think that's kind of been separated now? Or do you think there's still that huge connection that if you have HIV, then you're part of the LGBTQ community?
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. I mean, there are women who live in other countries who have HIV given to them by their partners, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they've been part of the LGBTQ community. I mean, the community is there to support them, and we're there to, you know, ensure that they are coping with it wholeheartedly. We're there to ensure that they're getting the right treatment and they're getting the right guidance. But yes, you're right. There are men who have sex with men are higher risk of transmitting HIV. But, I mean, if you look at the statistics, more and more straight men are the ones who are contracting HIV as opposed to gay men. And, I mean, we're trying to get the transmission down to zero and trying to ensure that in the next few years that no one's spreading HIV anywhere. I mean, there are hundreds of drugs out there right now that are helping with transmission prevention. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, there's PrEP, there's Truvada that's out there that can help stop the spread of HIV and be a pre-exposure drug. There are people who do have HIV who are on drugs that bring them down to a undetectable viral load, meaning that they have a very, very slim chance of spreading their HIV virus to someone else. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things, there's a whole bunch of knowledge and resources you could look up about HIV transmission prevention right now that's readily available. But I don't think that people who have HIV are automatically considered members of the LGBTQ mm-hmm. community. I mean, we're here for them and we're here to mm-hmm. support them, but they don't have to say that they don't have to be forced to want to be a part of our community.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Our doors are open all the time, right? We accept any and all.
Do you think there's still that stigma of that if you're gay, then you're probably going to get HIV?
There is that stigma, yes. I do find that. I remember when I first came out, one of my best friends had asked me if I had HIV yet. And she asked me if I had AIDS. And she brought me a whole bunch of literature on how to deal with having HIV and AIDS. And I was quite shocked that she would actually bring that to my attention. And, you know, she was naive and she didn't really understand the whole risk of transmission. And I guess she wasn't really as educated as I would hope she would have been. But again, we were both 16 years old, and she automatically assumed that because I identified as gay, she thought that, oh, great, you have AIDS now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, there is some people who don't understand it and still just automatically assume, and there is that stigma out there, but I think that stigma is slowly breaking down and slowly coming to a halt.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully in the next few years, we won't even have to worry about that stigma because there will be a cure. There's plenty of research out there that shows that they're close to a cure. I mean, hepatitis C is just cured now. So, I mean,
oh, really?
We have the ability, we're getting closer and closer to cures for other diseases.
Okay. Well, okay, I'm going to change gears again. I'm changing gears on you all the time.
It's fine.
I want to talk a little bit more about services for immigrants.
Yeah.
So do you find that there is enough services for people who have immigrated to Canada who are a member of the community?
That's a good question. I personally don't know 100% what the services are out there. But from what I've heard and what I've seen, I don't think there is enough. I think there needs to be more. There are groups, there's a community center, the 519, which does offer information and support and resources on immigration. But there's also, I mean, our government does offer a lot of support in terms of immigrating and you know, seeking asylum here for countries who do have LGBT hate laws, mm-hmm. right? Where being queer is totally legal and you could be sentenced to death. I mean, I do think that there needs to be more, and there needs to be more of a open doors policy, and we shouldn't really be shutting our doors to those members.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to clarify, Josh had mentioned this a while ago, but just in case we have new listeners, what is the 519 Center?
The 519 Community Center is at 519 Church Street. It is a community center that focuses on many things, one of which being safe spaces for all members of the community. So, I mean, you can walk on in and there's someone who's readily available to speak with you, someone from the community, a volunteer who is there who can speak with you, whether it be about your sexual orientation, questioning if you're transitioning. If you're transitioning, there's someone there who can help you. There's also support in terms of people who are infected with HIV and AIDS, who are dealing with STDs and STIs. There's also for people who are immigrants who are coming to this country who need support or who need just someone to talk to. The 519 has a lot of programming that's readily available, and they do a lot of good for our community.
It sounds like it's a great resource.
It is, definitely, and there needs to be more like that.
So on my last podcast, we had the whole conversation was around how sexuality is a spectrum.
Yep.
I was just wondering what your views are on that. Do you think it's kind of black and white in a sense, or?
It's not black and white. It's one colorful spectrum, just like the rainbow flag of pride. I do think that there is no black and white terminology in terms of sexuality. There have been reports now that a lot of students who are in elementary school and high school don't identify as straight. They identify as one of the letters of the acronym of the LGBTQ22S spirited community. Whether they be an ally or a straight individual or gay, lesbian, bi, transgender, I mean, not all of them are identifying as straight anymore, and that's pretty cool. I think that's a form of human evolution.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think we've come a long way since back in the day.
I mean, we're not your grandfather's community anymore. We've grown.
So then, back to you saying that students are identifying more as being part of other abbreviations, what advice would you give to someone, let's say, who's in grade school that is identifying it with, like, what advice would you give them? How would they tell their parents? Should they tell their caregivers or, like?
So I find with students who are in grade school may not understand their sexual orientation, or they may not understand their identity at the time. I know when I was in elementary school, I knew something was different about me. I didn't know that it meant that I was gay. I just thought that, you know, Daniel was cute and Sally was great. But I didn't really think that, you know, I was different in terms of a sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. For grade school students who, you know, if you're male and you want to dress up as a princess, go for it. I mean, your parents should be accepting of that. And if they're not, then they need to educate themselves on what it means to raise a child as gender nonconforming. Right now, I have a friend who has a baby on the way. Him and his husband are strongly considering not raising their child as a gender, and they're trying to be gender neutral. Mm. So anything they do for their child, whether it be for clothing, furniture, toys, they are asking everyone to make sure that's gender neutral, because they do not want to raise a child in this world to think that there's only two sides of genders.
So would you, and I'm going back to the original question now of the world being more accepting, and I'm thinking this more of like student-wise, for students who are just, I guess, coming into their own identity, although the world is more accepting, would you agree in saying that it depends on the individual's world as well, right? So it depends on the family and the culture, and that may have an impact on how the child or youth comes out.
Yeah, definitely. Depending on where their family origin is from or their family culture. I knew that as an Italian gay male, it was very hard to come out to my parents and my grandparents and my brothers and sisters. I knew the issues that I would face, and I knew that, you know, religion played very much a part of them not accepting me at first. When I first came out, my mother first said to me, she's like, it's against our religion, you should go see a doctor because I think you're wrong. It took some time for my mother to actually come to terms with my sexuality. I was very fortunate that my father was well educated and understood that, you know, being gay didn't mean that I was bad or I was in the wrong. Mm-hmm. He just said I'm different, and he told my mother that, you know, he's still your son, you still love him, shut up and let him be who he is. And I think that actually pushed my mother into accepting who I was and understanding. And I think, you know, my mother and I are very close to one another, same with my father. And they were both my advocates when I was growing up. When I came out to my grandparents, when I came out to my aunts and uncles, my cousins, my parents were right behind me. And if someone had an issue with who I was, they pretty much told him where to go. They said, you know, if you don't accept him for who he is, then that's your issue and you need to go deal with yourself, because there's something innately wrong with them, not me.
That's great. That's great that you had that support. What advice would you give a child? Because a lot of my listeners are either youth, mm-hmm. Or they're people who work with youth, so social workers or anyone that really works with a child or youth. What advice would you give? Two questions. What advice would you give a child or youth who is planning on coming out or struggling with that coming out process? Mm-hmm. And then my second question is, what advice would you give parents, caregivers, or social workers child and youth care workers that work with children and youth who are struggling with the coming out process?
So for a child or a youth who's struggling with coming out, I really don't like that word coming out, because I think that it's not really a word that means anything. I mean, there's no actual proverbial closet that you can walk out of. But there, I would say more so for childhood youth identifying who they are. For those individuals who want to identify as being different or gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, whatever you think you are, and whatever you personally identify with, then by all means, I think you should do it. I'm not saying that you should go ahead right now and go run to your parents and say, guess what, I'm gay. But I think you should also ensure that you have a support structure behind you in terms of friends, in terms of resources, in terms of knowledge of who you are, and then make sure you've done the research ahead of time just to ensure that you think this is who you are. It does take some time to figure out who that is and who you are. I have friends who originally identified as being gay, and it actually turns out they identified as being transgender. And, you know, it's very hard to have to identify twice as who you are, right? I mean, there's the first identification you get upon your birth, but then there's two more identifications that that person had to go through. So definitely research it. Experiment and explore your identity. The only way you can understand who you are is by exploration and by knowledge and research. But again, when you do face that decision of coming out to your family, I would definitely suggest that you look into any resources that might be around in terms of the 519 Community Center, the EGAIL Community Center, because there might be the possibility that your parents could potentially not accept you. And you have to deal with that. You have to deal with changing their mind.
So we're running out of time, but I just got to ask this last question because we talked about it on the last episode.
Yeah.
So one of the things we had talked about was that, or some people in the community don't really believe in the coming out process. They just believe in, I am who I am, I don't really need to come out, or I don't really need to, and I guess, you get what I'm saying,
you don't need
right?
a big parade to say who you are.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Would you agree with that?
I would. You don't need to make it official or have like a Facebook post or a Twitter or a tweet that says, this is who I am, guess what, get over it. No, I think that you should just be you. You do you. Because you know who you are, you know what you want, and be yourself. I never identified as being straight as in high school. I just identified as being me. And when I eventually started pursuing relationships, first person I dated was a man, was another male, and I introduced that person to my friends, and they were shocked to find out that I was gay, but I never said I was straight, so why are you shocked? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like I said, you do you. Be yourself, be who you are. There's no need to like open a door and say, guess what, I'm gay. I mean, doesn't need to be a big show or post about it. If that makes you feel comfortable and you think you should do that, by all means, go for it. But I mean, you're not forced to. No one's pulling you by the ear to open that door and kick you out of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, we're running out of time. So I have to ask you this very last question because I ask all my guests this question. What does advocacy mean to you?
Oh, wow. Advocacy means to me, it means being there for your community, being there in support of individuals and the people around you. You know, obviously being there for the things you believe in, and being someone who, or being a spokesperson for that, for your friends, for your family, for your community. Being an advocate doesn't mean you have to just donate money. It also means that you have to get up and, you know, speak on behalf of the small voices out there. I mean, if you hear hate, stop it. If you hear hate speech, stop it. If you hear people making fun of another person, you should stop it. I mean, those are just the little things you can do to be an advocate of the LGBTQ community.
Well, I think that's a very good way to end. Is there anything else you would like to say before we end our conversation?
Yeah, definitely. Happy Pride.
Happy Pride. So your right to speak will be posted on the second Wednesday of every month. Thank you again, Joy, for taking the time out to talk with me. It was nice seeing you again. It's been a while. If you're a child or youth, or you would like to be on the show or have an idea of what we should be talking about on the show, please email me at yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. That's Y-O-U-R. rrighttospeakagmail.com. Let's raise awareness together.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.